Greetings in Jesus' name this morning. It's a privilege to be here. I've been blessed with the service this far. I really believe that what has been shared so far will be able to keep right on thinking down some of those same lines. Before we get into the message, I would just like to mention that next Sunday, Lord willing, we will be at Living Hope, and so you can pray for us as we share there. I do look forward to fellowshipping there, but miss being here. So I want you to know that. This morning, I would like to speak on a specific Christian virtue, and we've already been looking at this virtue this morning. We're going to look at it in a little bit more of a broader sense. The title is one word, honesty. We live in a society today that accepts dishonesty as commonplace. To say things that aren't true, to lie or to twist the truth to our advantage, or just to have fun sometimes, is okay. And there could be many examples of that. So this morning I would like to look at honesty, what we as Bible-believing Christians are called to in the area of honesty. Are untruths okay? Let's begin by looking at what the Bible has to say about dishonesty. So if you would take your Bibles, we're going to go through a number of passages here in succession about dishonesty, about lying. First one is in Proverbs chapter 6. Proverbs chapter 6, we actually already read these verses this morning. Brother Micah read this. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 12. A naughty person, a wicked man, walketh with a froward mouth. He winketh with his eyes. He speaketh with his feet. He teacheth with his fingers. Frowardness is in his heart. He deviseth mischief continually. He soweth discord. Therefore shall his calamity come suddenly. Suddenly shall he be broken down without remedy. These six things doth the Lord hate. Yea, seven are an abomination unto him. A proud look, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, and heart that deviseth wicked imaginations, feet that be swift in running to mischief, a false witness that speaketh lies, and he that soweth discord among the brethren. A lying tongue, wicked imaginations, false witness that speaketh lies, and sowing discord among brethren. There's a correlation between all of those. Dishonesty. Dishonesty. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 22. Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but they that deal truly are his delight. Revelation chapter 21. We have two scriptures here in Revelation. Revelation chapter 21, verse 7 and 8. He that overcometh shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son. Verse 8, but the fearful and unbelieving and the abominable and murderers and whoremongers and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burneth with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. Turn over to chapter 22, verse 14. Revelation chapter 22, verse 14. Blessed are they that do his commandments, that they may have right to the tree of life and may enter in through the gates into the city. That's the celestial city that we hope to dwell in eternity. Verse 15, for without are dogs and sorcerers and whoremongers and murderers and idolaters, and whosoever loveth and maketh a lie. Notice that wording, whosoever loveth and maketh a lie. It doesn't say whoever speaks a lie. Indeed, it would include that. But I would like to show us right here that lying is more than just speech. Can be more than just speech. Lying and deception in the heart will find its way into all of life. Our actions, even without words, can be dishonest, can be deceiving, can be deceptive. And as we have read, lying demands the punishment of God. God hates dishonesty. I would like to look now at two examples, real life examples of God's judgment on dishonesty. Turn to 2 Kings chapter 5. This is the story of Naaman the leper. And we know the story well, how there was this little maid that was taken captive to Syria and was a maid there as a slave there in the house of Naaman. And Naaman became leprous. And this maid spoke to them and told them that he can be healed. He just needs to go back to the land of Israel and find the man of God, Elisha, and he can be healed. And so Naaman does this. He gets his chariots, he gets his horsemen together, and he goes to the prophet's house, and Elisha doesn't come out to see him. Instead, he sends his servant out. And Naaman leaves angry. But his young men speak to him. And by the way, this was honest of these young men. These young men speak to Naaman and say, you know, you would have done a great thing. Look at all the gifts you've brought. You would have done something big for the prophet. All he's asking you to do is wash in the river. And Naaman acknowledged that truth and went and washed. Let's pick up reading in verse 14. 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 14. Then went he down and dipped himself seven times in Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God. And his flesh came again like unto the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. Verse 15, and he returned to the man of God, he and all his company, and came and stood before him. And he said, behold, now I know that there is no God in all the earth, but in Israel. Now therefore, I pray thee, take a blessing of thy servant. But he said, as the Lord liveth, before whom I stand, I will receive none. And he urged him to take it, but he refused. And Naaman said, shall there not then, I pray thee, be given to thy servant two mules, burden of earth for thy servant, which henceforth offer neither burnt offering nor sacrifice unto other gods, but unto the Lord. In this thing the Lord pardon thy servant, that when thy my master goeth into the house of Rimmon to worship there, and he leaneth on my hand, and I bow myself in the house of Rimmon, when I bow down myself in the house of Rimmon, the Lord pardon thy servant in this thing. And he said unto him, go in peace. So he departed from him a little way. But Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said, behold, my master hath spared Naaman this Syrian, and not receiving at his hands that which he brought. But as the Lord liveth, I will run after him and take somewhat of him. So Gehazi followed after Naaman, and when Naaman saw him running after him, he lighted down from the chariot to meet him and said, is all well? And he said, all is well. My master hath sent me. There's the first lie. My master hath sent me, saying, behold, even now there become to me from Mount Ephraim two young men of the sons of the prophets. Another lie. Give them, I pray thee, a talent of silver and two changes of garments. Verse 23. And Naaman said, be content, take two talents. And he urged him and bound two talents of silver in two bags with two changes of garment, and laid them upon two of his servants, and they bare them before him. And when he came to the tower, he took them from their hand and bestowed them in the house. And he let the men go, and they departed. But he went in and stood before his master. And Elisha said unto him, whence comest thou, Gehazi? And he said, thy servant went no whither. Another lie. And he said unto him, went not mine heart with thee when the man turned again from his chariot to meet thee? Is it the time to receive money and to receive garments and olive yards and vineyards and sheep and oxen and men servants and maid servants? The leprosy therefore of Naaman shall cleave unto thee and unto thy seed forever. And he went out from his presence, a leper as white as snow. Now this passage shows so well how dishonesty works. It takes another lie to cover the first lie, and it just keeps going to keep the truth hidden. But foolishness, so foolish, because God sees it all. Elisha, through the Spirit of God, saw exactly what Gehazi had done. He was there, the Spirit of God. And it was God working through Elisha that brought swift judgment, immediate. He went out a leper. And it says, on his seed, forever. I didn't study this, but I'm assuming that after that, Gehazi's family was never healthy. Now, this story is Old Testament, and Satan would like us to believe a lie, and that lie is that God doesn't judge dishonesty like he did in the Old Covenant. That we live in a time of grace, and that in the New Covenant, dishonesty would not be judged so quickly, so swiftly, so harshly. Let's not fool ourselves. Let's turn to Acts chapter 5. Acts chapter 5, we'll read the first 11 verses. Acts 5, verse 1. But a certain man named Ananias, with Sapphira his wife, sold a possession, and kept back part of the price, his wife also being privy to it, and brought a certain part, and laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why hath Satan filled thine heart to lie to the Holy Ghost, and to keep back part of the price of the land? Whilst it remained, was it not thine own? And after it was sold, was it not in thine own power? Why hast thou conceived this thing in thine heart? Thou hast not lied unto men, but unto God. And Ananias, hearing these words, fell down and gave up the ghost, and great fear came on all them that heard these things. And the young men arose, wound him up, and carried him out, and buried him. And it was about the space of 3 hours after, when his wife, not knowing what was done, came in, and Peter answered unto her, Tell me, whether ye sold the land for so much? And she said, Yea, for so much. Then Peter said unto her, How is it that ye have agreed together to tempt the Spirit of the Lord? Behold, the feet of them which have buried thy husband are at the door, and shall carry thee out. Then fell she down straightway at his feet, and yielded up the ghost. And the young men came in, and found her dead, and carrying her forth, buried her by her husband. And great fear came upon all the church, and upon as many as heard these things. Here we see in the New Testament God dealing swift punishment on the sin of dishonesty. Now, indeed, this was the book of Acts, and these miracles and signs were to help establish that fear of God in the hearts of that early church. And yes, today we may lie and we may not experience immediate leprosy. We may not be struck dead. I wouldn't promise that you wouldn't be. There's no promise that you would not face death because of such an act. But the fact is that dishonesty demands God's punishment, and it will be judged unless we deal with our sin. And I believe because of this that us as parents should be, when our children are just young, finding ways to instill in them a fear of dishonesty, a fear of lying. And I'm a young parent, so I don't know always how that should work, but I had a few experiences of one of my children saying a lie to cover up another wrong. And I watched their expression as I confronted them about the lie and just left the other thing go for the moment and dealt with that in a seriousness, with absolutely no excuse. And I saw the eyes get big. A lie? What is that? And there's a fear there. And I think we should try to instill that fear of lying in our children. Fear of dishonesty. Satan is the father of lies. The first thing that the Bible says about him in Genesis chapter 3 in the Garden of Eden, it says, Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field. Subtle. He was more cunning. He was more crafty. He was more deceptive than any other creature. That's Satan. That's the first thing we learn about him. Jesus told the Pharisees in John chapter 8, verse 44, Ye are of your father the devil, and the lust of your father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. I trust that from these passages we see God's hatred for dishonesty, and where it comes from, Satan himself. Now I would like to switch to the positive and talk about honesty. And I have two questions. The first question I would like to answer is, why is honesty so important? And I have three answers for this question. And there could be many. There could be a lot more. But this morning we're just going to look at two answers. Why is honesty so important? The first one, honesty comes from God. God is truth. God cannot lie. What God says happens. He's always consistent and unchanging. God is I am. And because of that, we can put our full confidence and trust in the promises of God. God is truth. And as much as God is truth, or as God is truth, to be godly, to be in His image, we must be honest. Colossians chapter 3, 9 to 10. You may turn there, Colossians chapter 3, 9 to 10. To be godly, to be in His image, we must be honest. Colossians chapter 3, verse 9. Lie not one to another, seeing that ye have put off the old man with his deeds, and have put on the new man, which is renewed in knowledge after the image of Him that created him. Being renewed in the image of Him that created you and me. Godliness starts with honesty. It may be possible to have a degree of honesty, at least with other people, without godliness. But it is not possible to have godliness without honesty. Honesty comes from God. The second answer, why is honesty important? Honesty is essential to salvation. The first step of salvation when we come to God is to see ourselves as a sinner before God. And this requires us to be honest and open about who we are. And throughout our Christian life, working out our salvation requires us to be honest. Here's where I'm at. Here's who I am. And to be real, to be honest and humble before God. And as we are honest before God, we must also be honest before others, before men. So number two, honesty is essential to salvation. Number three, third answer. Honesty is foundational to good character. Now this one's obvious. Even many non-Christians, they may not agree with the first two answers I gave, but they would probably agree with this one, that honesty is foundational to good character. Most of us have probably been around people that seem to have it all together. They're polite, they can be respectful, they may know how to work hard, they may even have a clean and orderly appearance. But when dishonesty is found, all that seems of no use, no value. The flip side, some of us, this might be a little bit more rare, but some of us have probably been around people that, well, they may not be the most cleaned up. They may not be very polite. They may be pretty crude. But they're known for being honest and saying the truth. And you know what? That person has a respect of other people because of that. When somebody has a reputation for telling the truth, they'll be recognized for that. Just like a building, the first example I gave is like a building that, although it's so beautiful on the outside, is so pretty, but there's no foundation underneath. That's like the first example. And then you can have a building that may not look that good, but underneath there's a solid foundation. You can do a lot with a building like that. I think Dean could rebuild that one. The first one I'm not so sure about. It'd take a lot more work. So honesty comes from God. Honesty is essential to salvation, and honesty is foundational to good character. Second question I would like to answer is, who must we be honest with? Who must we be honest with? First of all, we must be honest with God. You can turn to Luke chapter 18. Luke chapter 18. This is a parable, a story that Jesus gave at 18, verse 10. Two men went up into the temple to pray, the one a Pharisee and the other a publican. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, God, I thank thee that I am not as other men are, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this publican. I fast twice in the week. I give tithes of all that I possess. And the publican, standing afar off, would not lift up so much as his eyes unto heaven, but smote upon his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For every one that exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted. We can't fool God. God sees our hearts. He sees our motives for everything we do. And yet, so often, like this proud Pharisee, we think we can fool God with our goodness. Our goodness. We must be honest with God. Number two, we must be honest with ourselves. And some of this runs a little bit together with being honest with God, but there are a few distinct things about being honest with ourselves. Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7, verse 21. I would also mention that in the verses we just read that it talks about pride. And if there's anything that militates against honesty, that keeps us from being honest, a number one thing that keeps us from being honest, it's pride. Matthew chapter 7, verse 21. Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name, and in thy name have cast out devils, and in thy name done many wonderful works? And then will I profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity. God will not judge us by what we think is right, but by the truth. The truth from himself. And so we need to be willing to question our own motives, our own actions, and think soberly and ask God to show us where we're wrong. That's what it means to be honest with ourselves. One aspect. Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12, verse 3. Like we said, pride militates against humility. Romans 12, verse 3 says, For I say, through the grace given unto me to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, according as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith. To be honest with myself is to realize that I'm not above, I'm not greater than others. We tell our children, at least I hope we do, we tell our children they're special, they're unique, there's no one else like them, and that is true, and they need to feel that love and acceptance. But as they grow up, they also must learn that each and every person is special, and that none of us are of greater or lesser value. We each have our own unique personality and giftings, but we are not of greater value than others. I must also realize, in being honest with myself, I must also realize that I'm not perfect. I have needs, and God can use others to help me. If I'm truly honest with myself, I will value others bringing criticism into my life. And we heard about that this morning, about approaching each other in love. But you know, if we're truly honest with ourselves, we value criticism. And yes, I hope that if you bring me criticism, I hope you've prayed and I hope it's in love. But you know, even if it isn't, I value that criticism. That's what it means to be honest with ourselves. Another aspect of being honest with ourselves is being careful with our imagination. We need to be aware that our minds can fool us into believing things that are completely untrue. To illustrate this, I'll just talk about a little bit about a discussion that just recently happened there in the Raymer house while we were there visiting. We were talking about nighttime fears. Okay? So there were stories like, you know, nobody's at home, I'm home by myself, or it's just two of us at home and we're in such a bedroom or basement and there's a noise. Hey, what was that? And after a while, there's another noise. Oh, what was that? And before long, you're convinced there's somebody else in the house. And you have to go check, and there's nobody. Noises that happen all the time that most of the time we don't pay any attention to, but all of a sudden, because our mind started thinking about it and began to imagine what could be making the noise, we were led down a false trail. I had to share one of my own stories about one time a scenario like this happened. I'm not sure. This is a number of years ago. I think we were in bed. I'm not sure. But it was night. It was dark. And I don't remember whether it was noises or what it was, but whatever the reason was, I decided I'm going to go check in the basement. Something's not right in the basement. And I didn't think a lot of it. I mean, after all, this happens and there's often nothing, but I'm headed back the hallway and I get to the basement door and I open the door. And as I open the door, I feel somebody's hands on the other side of the door, holding the door back. You know, you could just feel that tension. It wasn't solid. It wasn't a bump. It was... Ooh. And I shut the door and regaining my breath and I look down and there's a rolled up towel at the bottom of the door. My wife had put it there to save heat the cold air coming up from the basement that day. It's the same way with our relationships with people. Somebody does something that's questionable, and we begin to imagine. And our minds do the exact same thing. And we continue down that road. And after a while, we're convinced that we know why they did what they did. We heard already about seeing the value of others speaking into our lives. And Brother Micah gave a story of somebody that, out of love, spoke into somebody's life and they didn't receive it. And so often, even though somebody hasn't done wrong, they've tried to reach out in love. Or maybe they haven't. Maybe they have done wrong and hurt you. But we begin to, our minds take that and they begin to run away with it. Maybe somebody said something that offended you, and we try to piece together what motivated that comment. And after a while, you're believing that this person hates you. And some people, I think many of us have bumped into people like this. I've bumped into numerous ones. I've been around people that everybody's out to get them. You can't even reason with them. Everybody is against them. Even the person driving down the road that they have no idea who they are because they passed them on the highway or something, they're out to get them. Everybody's against them. You know, that's how they got there. It's that imagination. And once you do that too often and don't check that imagination, you soon find yourself in that place. If we're not careful to guard our minds, you know, the small personality defects, imperfections in our brothers and sisters turn out to be just like creaking floors in the night and rolled up towels at the bottom of the door. They become like a nighttime thief. And it's not true. We know Philippians chapter 4, verse 8, you don't have to turn there. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things. Whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest. We need to discipline our minds to think on things that are true and honest. And it's just like, you know, we often talk about the battle of the mind in the area of purity, men. And we talk about, you know, we can't keep the birds from flying overhead, but we can keep them from making a nest in our hair. And the same thing applies. Same thing applies with our imagination. You know, our minds do those things. Our minds do play tricks on us. They do. But we do have the opportunity to stop and say, is what I'm dwelling on, is what I've been thinking, is what the things that have been going through my mind, what are the facts? What is reality? And if I don't have any hard conclusions, it's maybe a good place to stop. It is a good place to stop. Number three, we must be honest with others. We must be honest with all men. If we are honest with God and with ourselves, we will also be honest with others. If you have your Bible still at Romans chapter 12, notice verse 17 says, recompense to no man evil for evil, providing things honest in the sight of all men. All men. That's our neighbors. That's our friends, family. That's our business relationships. and anyone we rub shoulders with. And it certainly applies to our relationships in the church, does it not? Ephesians 4:25 says, "Wherefore, putting away lying, speak every man truth with his neighbor." And notice this phrase, "For we are members one of another." For we are members one of another. That's the reason why we need to put away lying, because dishonesty brings schisms into the body. And it can happen in so many ways. Bearing false witness, spreading false reports. We heard about slander this morning. Pretending we're something that we're not. That's dishonest. Denying things we're guilty of. And on and on and on the list goes. True humility and honesty bring health to the body. So often we want to sugarcoat the truth. We know we must be honest about ourselves, about what we've done, and yet we try to make it appear as good as possible. Or maybe we try to say the truth but shift the blame onto someone or something else. I think I was probably about 14. I worked for a neighbor man, a dairy farmer. And did a lot of milking and feeding. And in this dairy barn, it was quite a long, staunchion barn, we had a Eubler feed cart. Now, a lot of us probably don't know what a Eubler feed cart is. Some of us do, but you can feed a lot of cows in a short amount of time, very fast, and you ride on them. And I was feeding one day, and where we would fill the cart, there was a conveyor that came into the barn. And it was, the end of the conveyor was close enough to the wall that you had to have the feed cart against the wall or you would lose feed. So it was normal. All of us did it. We would be backing. Oh, you also had to back up to it. You couldn't drive forward. We would back in there full speed, which is fast for a Eubler feed cart, and we would get close to that conveyor and boom, the side of the feed cart would come against the wall, the block wall, and slide under the conveyor. That was just an everyday the way we did it. The side of the cart got pretty brushed up over time, but that was okay. But there was a conduit, a metal wire pipe conduit that ran down the wall just a ways in front of that conveyor. And so you had to make sure that as you were backing up this aisle at full speed that you were past that pipe before you brought the cart over against. Well, you can guess what happened. One day I was feeding, and I took the cart over too soon, and I caught that pipe, and I don't remember if sparks flew, but the pipe separated right at the floor, and there was wires hanging out of the concrete at the bottom. And I didn't know what it was for, what the wires were there for. I looked at it, and, well, first of all, I should mention that my boss was, he wasn't a big man. Well, he was stocky, but he was just short, but very intimidating. At least I thought so. Probably not as much as I thought. And so I looked at this, and I thought, what am I going to do? He's going to see this, and I know what happens when he sees stuff. He comes around and he asks who did it. So I can't just let it go. I knew enough that I need to be honest. I need to just go and tell him what happened. The sooner the better. I knew that much. And lo and behold, it wasn't long after, here he comes through the doors with a fast walk for a short man like he usually did. And I said, that pipe over there where we fill up the feed cart. The feed cart hit it, and I broke it. The wires are hanging out there. I think we need to get it fixed. And that man, even though at age 14 I was a good bit taller than he was, just looked at me and got a smirk on his face and said, "I would have said the driver hit it." And even though I stood head and shoulders above him, I felt this big in front of him. And I never forgot that. And since then, I've worked for other quite, as I see, intimidating men. And I've always remembered that lesson. And not too long ago, our service manager where I work now retired, and I worked under him for almost 10 years, I believe. And not to be boastful, but between me and him there was a trust that often was not between other employees. And as I thought about it one day as he was retiring, and, you know, he was the type of individual that, well, could be difficult some days. And as I thought about those things, and some people would even ask me, you know, what's the difference? What's the difference between your relationship with this person versus somebody else's? I don't know all why, but I think this has something to do with it. Just say it the way it is. I did it. This is what happened. I messed up. If we approach our wrongs that way, and be honest, it will go a long way for us. What about our business dealings? Do our customers have confidence that they can receive, that they will receive the quality of product they paid for? We always talk about this when we talk about honesty, but you know it's real. It's real. It's so easy to be deceptive. Do we keep our commitments? Can people count on us? And when we can't meet a commitment, do we try to communicate that we're not going to meet that commitment and keep that respect? Do we communicate well? You know, just poor communication can become dishonesty. We need to communicate with people, because if there's misunderstandings, the same thing happens. Communicate. What about honesty with the law? Do we try our best to be law-abiding? I think, in general, we do. But there's some difficult areas, no doubt. You know, there's lots of sticky areas we could talk about. Things like local building codes. And regulation. Sometimes are so detailed it's pointless. What about wording the use of a building in such a way that it falls under a less aggressive bracket of regulation? I think that sometimes there is times where it's not necessary to follow every jot and tittle in detail and be overly conscientious. But at the same time, we need to be careful that we keep a sensitive attitude and a sensitive conscience towards the law. If we find ourselves seeing what we can get away with, we definitely have gone too far. What about the testimony it will leave on the community? That's a good question to ask. There was a man in the local area that I knew. He's gone now. But he was building a building, commercial building. And there was something with, I don't know what it was, that he needed to do. And it was one of those conservation water runoff type of things. And he didn't want to do it. And he said, well, what's going to happen if I don't? And they said, well, you'll get a fine. Well, how much the fine's going to be? It's going to be this much. Well, it's going to cost, what it's going to take to do this is going to cost more than fine, so I'll take the fine. And he went in and did it. His paper was in the local newspaper. His picture, I'm sorry, was in the local newspaper for that act. That's not giving the testimony of Christ. It may have made sense in dollars and cents at the bottom line, but that was not That's not the kind of testimony we want to live, we want to give. What about protected animals? You know, depending what part of Pennsylvania I lived in, I think I would kill rattlesnakes. But it's a question. It's against the law. We need to be sensitive about those things. Conservation, environment protection laws. I think a lot of these things are good and right. You know, sometimes it's hard, though, to see what's so important about it. In fact, some of our laws that protect our environment, supposedly protect our environment, many of them, like I said, are good. I'm not against conservation by any means. I'm for conservation. But some of those laws are based, start with evolution as a science and protecting against things like global warming and things like that. Well, how do we respond to those kind of things? Once again, I'm not sure that I have all the answers, but one thing's sure. Let's keep a sensitive conscience before God and before our fellow men and watch our testimony. Make sure that Christ is not, the testimony of Christ is not spoiled in any way. In closing, I would just like to read a story. I think you children will enjoy this story. And I hope that we can all gain just a little something from it. It's just a short, if I'm not mistaken, I believe it's a Chinese legend. I wasn't able to confirm that 100%. But it's The Emperor's Seed is the title. Once there was an emperor in the Far East who was growing old and knew it was coming to a time to choose his successor. Instead of choosing one of his assistants or one of his children, he decided to do something different. He called all the young people in the kingdom together one day. He said, It has come time for me to step down and choose the next emperor. I have decided to choose one of you. The children were shocked, but the emperor continued, I'm going to give each one of you a seed today. One seed. It is a very special seed. I want you to go home, plant the seed, water it, and come back here 1 year from today with what you have grown from this one seed. I will then judge the plants that you bring to me, and the one I choose will be the next emperor of the kingdom. There was a boy named Ling who was there that day, and he, like others, received a seed. He went home excitedly told his mother the whole story. She helped him to get a pot and some planting soil, and he planted the seed and watered it carefully. Every day he would water it and watch to see if it had grown. After about 3 weeks, some of the other youths began to talk about their seeds and the plants that were beginning to grow. Ling kept going home and checking his seed, but nothing ever grew. 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks went by, still nothing. By now, others were talking about their plants, but Ling didn't have a plant, and he felt like a failure. 6 months went by. Still nothing in Ling's pot. He just knew he had killed a seed. Everyone else had trees and tall plants, but he had nothing. Ling didn't say anything to his friends. However, he just kept waiting for his seed to grow. A year finally went by, and all the youths of the kingdom brought their plants to the emperor for inspection. Ling told his mother that he wasn't going to take an empty pot. But she encouraged him to go and to take his pot and to be honest about what happened. Ling felt sick to his stomach, but he knew his mother was right. He took his empty pot to the palace. When Ling arrived, he was amazed at the variety of plants grown by all the other youths. They were beautiful in all shapes and sizes. Ling put his empty pot on the floor, and many of the other children laughed at him. A few felt sorry for him and just said, "Hey, nice try." When the emperor arrived, he surveyed the room and greeted the young people. Ling just tried to hide in the back. "My, what great plants, trees, and flowers you have grown," said the emperor. "Today, one of you will be appointed the next emperor." All of a sudden, the emperor spotted Ling in the back of the room with his empty pot. He ordered his guards to bring him to the front. Ling was terrified. "The emperor knows I'm a failure, maybe he will have me punished. When Ling got to the front, the emperor asked his name. My name is Ling, he replied. All the children were laughing and making fun of him. The emperor asked everyone to quiet down. He looked at Ling and then announced to the crowd, Behold your new emperor. His name is Ling. Ling couldn't believe it. Ling couldn't even grow his seed. How could he be the new emperor? Then the emperor said, One year ago today, I gave everyone here a seed. I told you to take the seed, plant it, water it, and bring it back to me today. But I gave you all boiled seeds, which would not grow. All of you except Ling have brought me trees and plants and flowers. When you found that the seed would not grow, you substituted another seed for the one I gave you. Ling was the only one with the courage and honesty to bring me a pot with my seed in it. Therefore, he is the one who will be the new emperor. How often are we trying to hide our failures, our empty pots, and push forth this lush plant that somehow is going to gain us respect and trust and get us to a place of position? And yet, the opposite is true. If we would just show who we are, I'm just an empty pot, I have failures, then people will trust in our experience. May God bless the message. Thank you.